Hello, I'm David Lang. I know you were looking forward to hearing this piece, but something terrible has just happened. While we were busy setting up, someone crept up silently behind you and dealt a quick blow to the side of your head. As you fell towards the floor and began losing consciousness, a number of disconnected thoughts crowded into your head. Here are a few of them.
What? What? What happened? That felt like a blow to my head. That's twice this week. What did I do? Why do they always pick on me? Huh? Why did I go to that concert anyway? I can feel it. I'm falling. How fast is my head approaching the floor? 32 feet per second. Per second. It feels much slower than that. Relax. Will I be all right? How will I get home? How do I act? Am I dressed right? I've never been unconscious before. I hope my mouth isn't open. Shh. Don't worry. You'll be fine. Say.
There are lots of different ways to have a life as an artist, you know, and there's nothing wrong with anyone else who, you know, with like the normal way, which right. is that somebody comes to you and they say, I have a string quartet and can you write me a string quartet? And you right. go, yeah, I can write you a string quartet. You know, there's lots of great music that's made that way. Mm-hmm. And that is a big part of our tradition in classical music, that people are writing for specific occasions and specific people and specific dinner parties by, you know, wealthy Viennese nobles. Right. And that's a job, you know,
right.
it's, there's a lot of great music that's been made that way through history. So I don't want to say anything bad sure. about that world, but I always tell my students that, that there's no guarantee that what you're going to be asked to do when a commission comes up or when a need comes up or some opportunity comes up, there's no guarantee that what you're going to be asked to do actually is interesting to you. So the thing that you need to do in your life is to pay close attention to the things you really are passionate about, that you really want to accomplish, mm-hmm. that you're really curious about, so that when these opportunities come up, you can measure how close they are to something that you really want to do.
Right.
And then someone can say, well, you know, here's an opportunity for a 10-minute string quartet because that's the slot we've got. And then you can say to yourself, well, actually, you know, I've always wanted to write a piece for a string quartet and car horns, you know, and that's the piece I really want to do.
Right.
Do you want that?
Right.
Or I've always really wanted to write a piece for, you know, this Celtic fiddler and string quartet. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And maybe this would be an opportunity
right.
to do
right.
that.
Do you teach a course? Do you work with students individually? Do you, is it a seminar or do you actually also have a course that you teach?
Both.
Tell us about your course.
I teach at the Yale School of Music,
right.
where I also did my doctorate. So
right.
I know the school pretty well. And I teach private lessons.
Right.
I team teach a seminar with my colleagues on the faculty there in the composition department, which I have to say is really incredible. Mm-hmm. They're all amazing. And also, I teach one lecture class a year, and the lecture can be on any topic that I like, basically. You know, so I've taught classes on the idea of virtuosity is mm-hmm. a class I teach, mm-hmm. on what it is to write music, which is hard, and how composers have isolated different parts of music to be hard with. Mm-hmm. So, for example, a piece of music that has incredible length, and that's what you're supposed to pay attention to. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what I would call durational mm-hmm. virtuosity, and how do you make a piece of music so that you pay attention to how long it is and not pay attention to certain other things that might get in the way of noticing that. I teach a class called Music and Patterns, which is about the different meanings of different kinds of patterns through mm-hmm. music history. Mm-hmm. So, for example, the patterns that minimalist composers use about how to sort of build things from nothing.
Right.
So early Philip Glass and early Steve Reich trying to say we have this kind of element which has no emotional value mm-hmm. and we do something mathematical to it in order to build value. Is very different from the way patterns are used in, say, the Bach B minor Mass, where Bach will make a symmetrical structure with a crucifixion in the middle in the credo of the B minor Mass in order to say something about what he believes. You know, this pattern shows you, I believe the world is perfect, and at the center point is the crucifixion of Jesus.
Right. Or Indian or Near Eastern music, where the pattern relates to visual expression.
That's right.
Do you put together a syllabus? Do you just kind of go as you go?
I have a syllabus, yeah.
You're going to create a book?
I want a book. All these things could be books. Yeah, I'd love to do that, yeah. So
okay, let's get working on
it. Okay, I'm going to get working.
Bring it in tomorrow.
And this year I taught a class called How to Tell a Story about different ways that narrative works, because one of the things that's really nice that's happened to me is that I'm going to be the composer in residence at Carnegie Hall next year.
Right.
And they asked me, I think sort of...
I think they even have the word chair in that.
Yes, I'm the Richard and Barbara Debs chair, composer chair, right? The joke is, of course, you know, I want to get if I get a couple more chairs and a table, I can have people over for dinner.
Oh.
But anyway, but they asked me if I wanted to curate a few concerts for them. And
right.
I think they thought it would just be music of my friends or something.
Right.
But because so much of my life has been about trying to build other audiences
sure.
and trying to explain classical music to other people, I proposed this multi-day extravaganza called Collected Stories.
And when is this going to be?
This is April of 2014.
Okay,
so next
mark
April,
your calendars.
Yeah.
Get your tickets.
I think there's 7 concerts. Mm-hmm. And they're each about a different kind of narrative
right.
proposal divided. So there's one about music and telling a story about hero. It's a hero story. One is religious music, spirit. My favorite one is travel. Uh-huh. So we're doing the entire list Année de Pèlerinage, uh-huh. all 3 books.
Whoa.
In order, so that you actually feel the scope of this guy's life.
How many
as it
pianists,
changes.
Or is it going to be played
it's
on accordion?
Luis Lorti, right?
Okay.
And it's 3.5 hours okay. long, and so it's not contemporary music. It's,
right.
It's a festival which has music from all different kinds
right.
of
so
places.
So there's this
and
integration
worlds.
Vertically and horizontally. You have these themes,
right?
And within that, you might have rock and classical and romantic
yeah, well,
and
usually
no
what
rock.
Happens is that there's a story on called Love and Loss. There's mm-hmm. there's one about different ways that you might tell the story of love and loss, which is a very popular subject in pop music. So I have
Schubert too, but
well,
yeah.
Schubert also, yeah. So this program, the idea is to put things together, except mm-hmm. for the list. All the other programs
right.
put things next to each other that are showing different sides of this. So that program begins with a you know, kind of anti-folk singer Kimya Dawson, who became successful because she did the songs from the movie Juno.
Right, right. I loved those.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah. And so she is doing a set that also includes this amazing rapper Aesop Rock. She has a band that mm-hmm. goes around working with him. Then the second half of the concert is an Irish folk singer singing the old Irish ballad, The Two Sisters. Mm-hmm. Then two pieces of music which are based on that story of the two sisters, one by Julia Wolfe called Cruel Sister, a big piece for string orchestra, and one of them a piece by Nico Muhly called The Only Tune with mm-hmm. the folk singer Sam Amidon.
Oh, wow.
So
now this is all going to be in the big Isaac Stern Auditorium or in Weill Hall?
It's in Zankel.
In the
medium
underground,
size. That's right, yeah.
Yeah,
the one for
size.
Those of us who are really old, it's the one that
movie
used
theaters.
To be the movie theater.
Right.
Yeah. So
the one where you can hear the subway.
That's right, yeah. I think that's every hall in New York.
Well, but, right.
Yeah. Including my apartment.
I love everything about this, and I'm hoping I can get there.
Please.
For at least some of it, if not all of it. I'm wondering if, though, since we're now on stories, you might tell us not the story of necessarily the Little Match Girl Passion, but the story of David Lang making the Little Match Girl Passion, because that's what we're able to see and hear very soon, because that's coming up at Ravinia at the Martin.
Well, the story of this is, again, you know, it's like it comes out of my questioning how I ended up being a classical musician to begin with. You know, if you love classical music, you end up listening to a lot of music which is about Jesus, because that was our main employer for 1,000 years.
Happens if you like art, too. Right?
It happens if you like art also. It happens if you like all sorts of things that have to do with our culture. You know, it's very hard to separate the investigation of our history as people who make things in the art, in the arts, with from the things which come out of the desire to worship Jesus and to elevate Christianity. Those things were associated. In fact, one of the things I teach in my music and patterns class is all the first composers whose music we play now would not have defined themselves as composers. They would have defined themselves as monks. They would have said, we're making music, we're in Notre Dame Cathedral in Paris, and our job as musicians is to help people worship better. You know, there are people who were involved in this issue. So when did the idea of being a composer become separate from the idea of being a Christian?
Right.
That's a very interesting question, but I'll save that for another interview.
Please.
What happened in this piece was, I am not a Christian. So for my entire life as a lover of classical music, and especially as somebody who reveres the music of Bach, Bach, who was a very devout Christian, I'm constantly in the presence of music that has a border between where it lives and as far as I can go. And especially because I'm a fairly religious Jew, when I listen to a lot of Christian music, you know, if you listen to a passion, of course, you know, you listen to a setting of a story of a gospel, there's some unbelievably powerful music that comes from this tradition. But as you might imagine, you know, you get to a place in there where you have to say, you know, it's not good for the Jews, right?
So particularly if you're listening to the John Passion.
Well, the St. John Passion in particular, you know, is incredibly beautiful, but, you know, there's no definition, there's no use of anything that describes a Jew in the St. John Passion that doesn't have an adjective which is pejorative next to it. It's very difficult. And yet the music is really powerful.
Yes.
And it's clear that this is something that Bach believes in. How you deal with this as an artist who's deep in Western civilization and Western music is very curious, you know. And for people in my situation, you have to sort of block it out, or you have to come to terms with it somehow. I was
always not a block it outer.
I'm not a block it out guy. So for years I've been trying to figure out how to deal with this. You know, then I got a commission from Carnegie Hall to do a piece for the great singer Paul Hillier and his great ensemble Theater of Voices. And I thought, these singers are so amazing. You know, maybe it's time for me to figure out how to deal with this. So I came up with the idea of taking my favorite crowd scenes from the Bach St. Matthew Passion, not the music, just the text. And this is the text, of course, where people are watching the suffering of Jesus, and they're challenging themselves. They're going, we notice this person's suffering, and this suffering is important to us, and we're better than those people back then. You know, we know now that this suffering you know, makes us a community of people who can't let this ever happen again. Mm-hmm. You know, we have to take this seriously. This was an important event. And those people 2,000 years ago, they let it happen and they blew it. And we're never going to blow it like that again. So I thought I'm going to take these beautiful crowd scenes from the St. Matthew Passion, but I would take the story of Jesus out and instead apply their noticing someone suffering to somebody else who wasn't Jesus. Mm-hmm. So I was looking around for all sorts of different stories, and I looked at, you know, New York Times obituaries, and I looked at, you know, anything I could think of. And then finally my wife said, what about the little match girl? That's a nice story. And so and that seemed to work, you know. So I took the little match girl story that everybody knows, the Hans Christian Andersen story of the little girl who's trying to sell matches and freezes in plain sight of everyone in her community. And I intercut that story into these crowd scenes from the St. Matthew Passion where people go, you know, oh, that person is suffering. How does that make me a citizen? How does that make me a person? How does that make me a better person to notice that this person's suffering is happening? And what can I do to make sure that doesn't happen again? So I didn't really know what the experience was going to be like. You know, I thought maybe I was going to get my house firebombed or something, you know. And sure enough, when it won the Pulitzer Prize, you know, the little banner that went on Fox television was composer wins Pulitzer by taking Jesus out of the Passions. But basically, you know,
the little match girl is the reason for the season.
but basically, you know, I'm because I am a religious person.
Right.
I actually have tremendous respect for anybody's religion, you know, and I wasn't trying to do anything that was destructive. And I think anything that allows people to challenge the world around them and to challenge themselves to be better is a good thing. So I didn't really want to make a piece that made fun of that.
Right.
I made a piece which was respectful and was in its way kind of a religious piece, but just kind of in a substitute religious mode.
And in a way, it's a piece, I'm guessing, that for you is not just an answer to the piece, but it's an answer in the Buberian sense. It's an answer to Bach. It's if you could hand this to J.S., you'd say, this is what I'm responding to you with.
Well, I think in a way it's sort of, it's an outline of the St. Matthew Passion. Mm-hmm. It's not saying these are all the details of the death of Jesus that I want to, you know, recount for you, but it's an outline, I think, for me of how you look at the suffering of someone else and use that as a way for you to talk to God. Mm-hmm. And to me, that was a really interesting and important thing to do.
Briefly tell us, what is the piece scored for and about how long is it?
It's four musicians, so it's a soprano, alto, tenor, bass, and they each play very, very, very simple sporadic percussion. So there's a little glockenspiel, a little drum, very, very simple. It's very delicate. There is a version that I have made for larger choir, so it exists in that other version as well. But what's going to happen at Ravinia is the original four-person version. It's 35 minutes long. Mm-hmm.
So you know how to prep. Ralph Shapey, whose name I do mention a lot, did not like program notes and thought people should just listen to the piece. And I loved a couple of times when there still were enough critics and so on, they would have critics' lunches and these kinds of things. But Ralph, what are we supposed to tell our readers about your piece? And Ralph said, tell them it's 28 minutes long. So I've always felt that the listener's entitled to, because that's our participation too. We have to plan our experience a bit. And if a piece, it's always interesting to me too, to ask people when they say, oh, that was so long, or that was the longest version of the Mozart K, whatever, that I ever heard. And then you actually look, no, it wasn't. Just, you know,
right, you just felt like it.
You felt that way.
Well, also, I guess when you're talking about the St. Matthew Passion, you know, people might worry that my piece is 3 hours long.
Yeah.
You know, I have to say there have been some times where I put on the Magnificat because I just don't have the energy to spend 3 hours listening, you know.
Was there ever a point where your wife called Helmut Lachenmann and said, "The Little Match Girl is a nice story," or was it was just floating in the air?
You know, it's a story that everybody knows,
right.
And I think probably it's a story that's being set to music by somebody at this very minute who's never heard of my pieces or Helmut Lachenmann's piece. So, and Lachenmann's piece is about as far from my pieces as you can possibly imagine.
I happen to like both of them. But
I do. I like the Helmut Lachenmann very much, actually.
Yeah. We have covered a lot of things, and you've been extremely generous with your time. I have to ask you, though, about one other subject that sort of relates, actually, to what we've just been talking about. But I also have to ask you for a bit of fun. We're in this funny year where it's if you were a German, imagine, so they're so into Todestags and Todesjahrs and death years. But it's the 200th anniversary of Verdi. It's the 200th anniversary of Wagner. It's the 100th anniversary of Benjamin Britten. I have a feeling these are all composers you've spent some time with.
Oh, yes.
But our mutual friend, Alex Ross, says, ask him. He has some very interesting things to say about the matter of Wagner. So, of course, I know that's Alex's current obsession, but I'm just curious if there is something that's been on your mind for this bicentenary or for thinking about music and people who make it or listen to it.
You know, I have to say I'm a big Wagner fan, right?
Me too.
And you know, I think, first of all, the music is really amazing, but what I really like the most about him is his vision of what his job should be as a composer, you know? And I think that tying this whole conversation back to Bang on a Can, you know, it's like, what does being a composer mean? Is your job that you're supposed to sit in your room and write little scratches on a piece of paper and then you're done? There are composers who work that way, and there's nothing wrong with that. But I think actually another thing I tell my students is, you know, it's like it's not music when it's in your studio. It's like you write the music, but it's not music until somebody receives it.
Right.
It's not music until you've actually offered it to someone and someone has heard it. That's when it becomes music. It's
David Lang has his hands out offering.
I'm offering this.
Right. No, I think that's wonderful.
It's theoretical when it is in your studio, even if it's great. But it's not music until you offer it to someone else. And once you offer it, and when you think that completing that circuit is part of your job as a composer, then where does your obligation to that other person end? You know, if there's a way to hear that music, that's better, shouldn't that be part of your job too? So by saying someone has to receive this, well, then your job is audience building. Then your job is deciding how it should be played and how that's different from how other pieces should be played. Then it's the genre. Then it's the place, the education of the people in the community that should hear it. All of a sudden, this idea that what you're doing is supposed to be completed by being received by someone else means that you're involved in this utopian society building.
Right.
And what I love about Wagner is he's really the first person who asked that question.
Yeah.
He's the person who said, you know, if I have to make this opera happen, I can imagine every single way that this opera will be different from every other opera that's ever been done. And that means his job is huge.
Right.
And you know something? I think my job is huge,
yeah.
And I think all of our jobs are huge also.
Right. Gesamt doesn't mean some kind of dictatorial thing. It means that the Kunst, the art, the Werk, the work is a totality, and that it's not egotism. In fact, it's sharingism.
It's a responsibility.
Responsibility.
It's a responsibility.
That's,
you know,
that's a better word than sharingism.
Well, sharingism may be a good word in the future. But I really believe this is true, you know, and because I think that music composition is at the core of civil society and is the highest calling that anyone can have in the world, I feel that what we need to do as composers is to work harder to make sure that that as many people can participate in it as possible.
Well, David Lang works hard at all of these things, but he wears that hard work lightly because he presents himself in his music, in his performances with Bang on a Can, and in his person when he's talking to students or an audience or to us here on the radio. He presents himself with great joy and great passion in the non end of days sense. And I think he makes the case that that we like to hear, which is that music is what it's about. And it's really just been a pleasure and an honor to finally talk with you in person, David, and I hope we'll do it again.
Well, thank you. Anytime.
Thank you.
I always like it if people, including myself, can experience a new work firsthand for themselves. But in this case, since not all of you are going to be able to get to Ravinia on August 26th, and some of you even may be hearing this program after that performance, but also because a work this delicate, this gentle, this personal is going to be quite different at each performance. So when you hear Grant Gershon and colleagues at the Martin Theater, it may not be exactly the same as when you hear this recording made in Copenhagen in a church setting by Theater of Voices and Paul Hillier. So we're now going to hear the first two-thirds or so of David Lang's The Little Match Girl Passion, about 20 minutes or so, and we'll tell you more on the other side.
Come, 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 come It is true. She had on a pair of slippers when she left home. But they were not of much use. They were very large. So large indeed that they had belonged to her mother. And the poor little creature had lost them in running across the street to avoid two carriages that were rolling along at a terrible rate. One of the slippers she could not find, and a boy seized upon the other and ran away with it, saying that he could use it as a cradle when he had children. So the little girl went on with her little naked feet, which were quite red and blue with the cold. So the little girl went on with her little naked feet, which were quite red and blue with the cold. So the little girl
went on
with her little naked feet,
which were quite
red and blue with the cold.
With cold,
and hunger,
Patience.
God have mercy on us, we pray. branches and carpet rings. Like the seeds seen in the shadows, look down upon it all. The little ones stretched out a hand to them, and the match went out. The Christmas lights rose higher and higher, till they looked to her like the stars in the sky. Then she saw a star fall, leaving behind it a bright streak of fire. Someone is dying, thought the little girl, for her old grandmother, the only one who had ever loved her, and who was now dead, had told her that when a star falls, the soul was going up to God.
David Lang's The Little Match Girl Passion, written in 2007, Pulitzer Prize winner, and then a Grammy nominee in 2009, will have its Chicago area premiere Monday, August 26th at the Martin Theater at Ravinia in Highland Park. Grant Gershon will lead and perform with three other soloists in the vocal and percussion parts of this amazing piece. And Eighth Blackbird will also appear at Ravinia with music of David Lang, These Broken Wings, written for Eighth Blackbird, 2008, and music written for them as well, The Birds, recent music by Nico Muley and Andy Akiho. So all of that is a can't-miss concert for the summer, for the year, Monday, August 26th at Ravinia, 8 p.m. in the Martin. Music we heard this evening, we opened with from David Lang's first album, under his own name, not only as a member of Bang on a Can or any other ensemble, from the 1994 Composer's Recording Label release, Are You Experienced? The Nouvel Ensemble Moderne and David Lang with his 1987 composition and introduction. Midway, we heard from this recent album, David Lang, The Little Match Girl Passion, again, Ars Nova Copenhagen, again, was the name of the piece after Ecclesiastes, written in 2005, and then much of the main event of that album and of the performance that will take place on August 26th at Ravinia, the first two-thirds or so of The Little Match Girl Passion, recorded by the group it was written for, Theater of Voices, and its director, Paul Hillier. That's on the Harmonia Mundi USA label, a 2009 release. We want to thank our hosts at the Museum of Contemporary Art in Chicago, who set up our opportunity to talk with David Lang in mid-May, when he was there for the Whisper Opera Chicago premiere with the Ice Ensemble. Carla Loring, Peter Taub, and Yolanda Chesta Kursach. We want to thank them very much, in addition, of course, to Matt DeStefano, who recorded at the MCA and put the program together back here at WFMT and made it sound great. Our funders, Alpha Wood Foundation, Richard and Susan Kiphart, and other friends of this program. Let us know what you thought of this or any of our other programs. Drop us a line. Rentap, that's Patner spelled backwards, R-E-N-T-A-P at AOL.com. WFMT.com/critical thinking, the Critical Thinking, where you can hear the always free Critical Thinking podcast. Chime in at WFMT.com. Send us a paper airplane. There are many ways to reach us. I'm Andrew Patner. We'll see you next week, and I hope we'll also see you at Ravinia for The Little Match Girl Passion.